happened to Cro-Mags MDC, the Meat Man, the Dead Boys, even Darby.
Everywhere you look, there's a punk who wants to mosh with you. Everywhere you look, there's a punk who wants to mosh with you. Everywhere you look,
when you're lost out there and you're all alone, the circle pit will be your new home.
Punk News Podcast.
Episode 220.
Okay, welcome to the Punk News Podcast. This is Adam White. I'm recording in my my nice basement here behind a previously humming dehumidifier in Niagara Falls, Ontario, just trying to keep from, you know, being subsumed by the rising waters. Joining me on tonight's show, out of Philadelphia, Mr. John Gentile, features editor.
Back again, back in black, back for the attack, ready to talk some punk rock smack. Johnny G coming at you.
Mm-hmm. And out of wherever, California, where? Los Angeles? Are you in Los Angeles?
Yeah, Los Angeles.
Yeah, Los Angeles. All right. Ricky Frankel, how you doing?
Good. How are you guys?
I'm not too bad. Ricky, of course, is a reviewer on punknews.org, amongst other many illustrious things. So anyways, we're going to talk about some things tonight, pertaining to punk rock. It's going to be a little bit of a loose night. We're going to talk about we're going to make some mention of things that you guys should all know about. We've got these the first song from the Fugazi demo that came out. We've got the new Smith Street Band LP is streaming. We have Amoebix re-releasing one of their classic records. Say 10 has an anniversary party coming up. HR and Scotch Bonnets have announced a new EP. And the Gaslight Anthem have done a nerdy gig rundown or gear rundown that you guys can take a look at. So yeah, we got lots of stuff to talk about. But before anything, John was, when putting together this show, was like, I want to talk about records. So I guess we're going to talk about records.
Yeah, let's talk about records, man. You know, once in a while, especially when Ricky's on, because Ricky's a record collector maniac like myself. And I believe Adam White's been indulging in the drug of vinyl more often than he used to in the past. So you know, every once in a while when Ricky's on, when Adam's on, we like to talk about what cool records have come out. Let me tell you, people, a lot of cool records have come out lately. A lot of really cool reissues have come out lately. Namely, Circle Jerks have put out two really awesome reissues lately. The first reissue that they put out that I got is the Wild and the Streets reissue. As you, of course, you know, Wild and the Streets is Circle Jerks' second album. But what's super interesting about the new reissue is that it's the original mix. You see, what happened was when Circle Jerks put out Wild on the Streets in 1982, they put that out. Then when they went to repress it in 1988, they had lost the original masters. So the label at the time, which was not Front, it was Frontier, without the Circle Jerks oversight, they took the original tapes and mastered a new album. The result is an album that's like heavier and I guess a little bit more metallic than the first album. So people like me that got in the Circle Jerks in 1988 or afterwards were like, I can't believe they had such a different sound between the two albums. Well, the 1982 mix is actually a lot closer to the first Circle Jerks album, Group Sex. And frankly, I mean, it's not mind-blowingly different, but it's significantly different. It's a little bit lighter, a little bit snappier, a little bit rawer, and honestly, it makes the record sound really great. The kicker, I guess, is, or the quirk, is that it's out on Drastic Plastic, and there's only 1,000 of them, so it's kind of rare. The price tag is not super cheap on this. I got mine for $24. I think the suggested retail is $20. So, I mean, this is not for... Oh, Adam just said, who's eating? nobody's eating. That's me holding the plastic bag of my record. So no one's eating on the podcast. This is my Circle Jerks record.
It sounds like you're trying to slowly and quietly chew in a way that's polite but isn't actually working.
Well, if I could eat vinyl, I would. But the point is this, is it's like $24, $20. It's probably not your first to go to Circle Jerks record, but if you're a Circle Jerks maniac, it's a definite must have. Along those lines, just today, Kung Fu Records reissued Circle Jerks Live at the House of Blues. That was originally a DVD, but now they've made it an album form, and it comes with a download, which is crucial. Let me tell you, Circle Jerks, the first three albums are great. After that, the albums are kind of hit and miss. The songs are hit and miss. Some are great, some are not so great. But Circle Jerks was always phenomenal live, and they just got better and better and better. I know a lot of people think the Circle Jerks live record from 1989 gig is the go-to record, or even the go-to punk rock record. That's a great record, but I'm saying Live at the House of Blues is a little bit better. I mean, it's like 15 years after gig. The track list is kind of similar, but the band is more energetic, the sound is so much better. And also, it's got one of my favorite encores ever. It's got a Black Flag encore. They do Waste It and Nervous Breakdown, but they also do a cover of The Weirdos' Solitary Confinement. And I think so far, this is the only official live version of Nervous Breakdown featuring Keith Morris ever released. And let me tell you, it's phenomenal. I mean, Circle Jerks were amazing live. This sounds so great. It's on Kung Fu Records. This might be the second Circle Jerks record you should get after Group Sex. I mean, it sounds fantastic. And then let me just shout out two more records that I got. They released this a while ago, but I think it just hit the shelves today. Queen live in 1974 at the Rainbow. I'm a Queen maniac, man. Let me tell you, this was so needed. So we really needed this Queen live album. There's a one disc version, a two disc version. You should just get the two disc version, because the one disc version is like $14 and the two disc version is $17. You can get the vinyl version for like $50, but that's pointless. But Queen was always a phenomenal live band. But the problem is almost all Queen live albums are set after 1980. I think there's one from 84, one from 83, like one from like 88. The problem is, by then, Queen was a stadium rock band, and all stadium rock bands kind of have the same problem, is that they have to make their music work in a stadium, so they kind of have to generally like slow down the songs a little bit, make things, I guess, less nuanced and more bombastic, which is fine, but also sometimes the songs wind up being a little non-adventurous, a little stilted. Queen live in 1974 is them in a club at the Rainbow Club, and it's on. I mean, I think it's the best Queen live album by far. What amazed me most is a couple of things. Is first of all, what I like about live albums is how bands are like raw live. Queen live is like Frank Sinatra live. They are so on point. Like they sound almost like they do on the record, which isn't always a good thing. But in Queen's case, they're so precise and so wonderful sounding. Freddie Mercury Freddie Mercury might be the greatest singer ever, technical-wise. You can't believe how fantastic he sings in a live setting with no backing tracks or anything. But on top of that, this live album really makes you realize how great Queen the band was. Brian May goes from like delicate, beautiful, dreamy music to slamming heavy metal with a flick of a wrist. And he is truly rock and roll's most underrated guitarist. I mean, there are some versions of songs on here that sound almost Melvins-ish because he drones down so hard. Plus Phil Taylor and who's the other guy that I'm missing in Queen? Phil Taylor, Brian May, and I can't remember the other guy's name. The bassist, Roger Taylor and Phil, I forget his name. Roger Taylor, the bassist, is on top of it. The drummer honestly, at some points, there's heavy Led Zeppelin, and it truly is an amazing, amazing release. If you like Queen, you have got to get Queen live at the Rainbow Club, 1974. One caveat is I said like the songs are close to the album, which is true. What's interesting, though, is on Queen albums, Freddie Mercury would double or triple his voice a lot. Here, it's just him singing, so it lets you appreciate his actual voice and precision that much more. They also do a couple of cool covers, Jailhouse Rock, which they've done before, but they do Big Spender, Bebop of Lula, and Stupid Cupid. But there's one song they do that is way different than their album. They do Modern Times Rock and Roll. And I don't want to say it's a punk rock version, so I'll say it's like a heavy metal version. They play at twice the speed, and while Freddie Mercury is usually precise on this track, he just flies off the handle and goes crazy. I mean, if you like Queen, you have got to get this live release. I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing. Last record that I want to talk about. Adam White will appreciate this. Trans, the album Trans by Neil Young. I've had the vinyl for a little while. I wanted the CD so I could listen to my car, and actually the CD has slightly different mixes for some of the songs than the vinyl. So they actually never released it in America. I had to order it from the UK. But actually, I ordered it from America. They only released it in the UK, but copies have trickled over to America, and you can get them used for, like, really cheap. Neil Young's Trans album is extremely interesting because people know Neil Young as kind of like, well, you know, I mean, he's done some wild rock and roll, but he also kind of did the acoustic guy thing. Trans is a bizarre Neil Young album, and I think it's one of his best. He basically made a Kraftwerk-type album, but with a rock backing. So it's rock background music, and then Neil Young doing all these crazy robot sounds up front. I don't want to sound like a dick or pretentious guy, but it might be my favorite Neil Young album because it's so it's what I want Kraftwerk to be. I liked Kraftwerk, but I get bored with their 7-minute songs because there's no variation, whereas because Neil Young combines the randomness and wildness of rock and roll with the robotic sounds and stuff, I think it's an extremely interesting and really fun record. And some of the tracks are downright like menacing. Like there's one song that where he goes like, I need a device to sample and hold. I need a woman to do. It's wild stuff. So, Adam, this album Trans, are you down with this album?
Trans is part of that whole period where Neil is being almost intentionally difficult, but and partly being intentionally difficult because he was fighting with his label, but it allowed him to do some weird stuff because he wasn't necessarily, I guess because he freed himself of the expectations of making like a Neil Young record, he could just go out and be weird or embrace whatever kind of strange proclivities that he could come up with. And Trans was, I don't know, Trans is the pinnacle of that. It's funny because like a lot of bands, it's of course probably no surprise that it's a very kind of trendy thing if you're a Canadian indie band is to be, you know, covering Neil Young songs. But covering songs from Trans, especially covering them in different, playing them differently, if we're playing them, say, in like non-robotic ways and stuff like that, has been something I've been hearing more and more of. There's something, it's a lot of people have really romanticized Trans up here. It's one of these objects of fascination that people really like to zone in on because they're like, hey, remember that Neil Young record everyone hated because it was just so freaking weird? Like, we're into that because we are. Trans is a big deal. It's really cool because it's so fucking weird.
I always wonder if Neil Young does. I mean, Neil Young has got a lot of weird songs throughout his career, you know? Like, even early on in his career, he's got, like, 9-minute songs, which is pretty unusual for, like, 1968, you know? Do you think Neil Young gets enough credit for being a weirdo, or is he pigeonholed into his, you know, his country rock, folk rock, hippie rock persona?
I'm not sure if he necessarily gets credit, but he's definitely known for being sort of like intentionally, I don't want to say difficult, but
is he the Canadian Lou Reed?
So here's an example. So Neil and Crazy Horse a few years ago, they released an album called Greendale. And when Greendale came out, it was a whole sort of multimedia package. So Greendale itself was something of a rock opera in that there was a narrative thread going throughout it. Not that it was like overblown and operatic or anything like that. And it very much sounds like a Neil Young record, but there's a certain story thread that's running through all of Greendale, and they did it was a graphic novel that went with it, or a stage play. It was a whole bunch of stuff that went with it. Like, Neil was really into this as an art project. So then he went out and he toured with it. And when he was touring Greendale, that was what he would play. So he would show up at his shows, and he would play the Greendale record. And all of the, you know, the kind of like old bastard classic rock people that were in the audience that, you know, they wanted to go, you know, they wanted to go rock out to, you know, they wanted to hear like Cinnamon Girl and Helpless and all these, you know, things from the 60s and 70s that, you know, make them feel good for nostalgic reasons. And Neil was like, well, no, screw you. I'm not doing a nostalgia show. Like, I'm an artist, and this is what I'm going to do because this is what I'm trying to do right now. And he would play these songs just like unabashedly and just like piss off crowds full of people because that's the direction that he wanted to go. And he has this habit of doing stuff like that. So, yeah. I don't know what point I was trying to make, except that, you know, so I think he does get credit for I think kind of having a mind of his own on some of these things and doing weird stuff sometimes just because he wants to. And I guess that's kind of what's kept him from becoming, you know, becoming one of these, you know, casino circuit nostalgia acts, as I think a lot of the peers that he's had have done.
Yeah, like Jefferson Airplane and that kind of thing.
Oh, coming to Casino Niagara one time near you, you know, so. But yeah, anyways, yeah, Trans is pretty wild, so that's cool that you're into that.
Yeah, I really am into this album. People, check out Trans, I'm telling you.
So, Ricky.
All right.
What'd you pick up?
So, I'm going back kind of probably September, August. It's about as far as I'm going to go back, because we haven't done this in a long time. But I don't know if you guys remember 2013, Off With Their Heads and Morning Glory did that split. I was able to get all three pressings that they put out. There was one in red and green that was like they were like tour versions, and then Fat did a run of like 200 in black. That was the one I had, so it took me a little bit to find the other two, but I found those. Then this one was unexpected. I was able to pick up Bad Religion's No Control on translucent pink vinyl.
Wow.
And I forgot how awesome that record was. So I picked that one up. And also I'm just a fan of colored vinyl. If I can get the colored vinyl first pressing, like, or through like a pre-order, I'm there. I'll do it. And then let's see what else. I ordered this like in July and it finally came in September. Pairs Go to Prison on white vinyl from Anxious and Angry. That record, if you haven't listened to it yet, you are missing out. These guys just came out of nowhere and came up with this self-released album that blew almost everything else that is out of the water that has come out this year for me. So if you can check out Pairs Go to Prison, do that. And then I went to see Direct Hit open for Good Riddance. They did a short tour here in California, and there was a band that went on before Direct Hit. They're called Stop Breathing. I think they're from Oxnard or Santa Barbara. And I just became friendly with the merch girl, and she gave me the Santa Cruz EP that they came out with this year.
Look at Ricky, man, getting friendly with merch girls, Ricky. Yeah,
It was
the lady killer, I'll tell you.
So I haven't listened to it yet, but they were like a cool hardcore band, and I definitely sensed some Cro-Mags vibe from the lead guitarist.
Nice.
Which is cool.
Hey, merch girl, my name's Ricky Frankel. I write for Punk News. Maybe you heard of it.
You'd be surprised. I'm not to sound like a complete
douchebag. You write for Punk News, Ricky? That's right, baby.
I'm not kidding.
They call me Tricky Ricky.
It's I'm not kidding. I'm not sounding like a douche. It's worked. That has worked.
Tricky Ricky. It's more like John calls me Tricky Ricky. Like, oh, you name John?
I'm like, hey, baby. I honestly, I've never gone up to a girl and said, hey, baby. But I do in my cartoonish version of myself. I say, hey, baby, I write for Punk News. They run out the door and call the cops, let me tell you. exact opposite. I'll tell you.
So, yeah.
Ricky's trying to make me jealous of him, and it's working.
For a long time I have not bought a CD, but this month I bought a CD. John, I'm sure you'll be happy about that.
I love CDs, man. Everyone hates on CDs these days. I'm loving it because A, used prices of CDs are way down, and I don't care, man. Give them to me. I'll take them. Anyway, go ahead, Ricky.
So
before you pick up another girl, why don't you tell me what you got on CD?
Black Noise was auctioning off their very last CD of Morning Glory's The Whole World's Watching EP.
Mm.
And the reason I got it was because it's hand numbered, like out of 150, but the whole band signed each CD.
That's Morning Glory. Did you say Morning Glory? Black yeah. Noise is Brad Logan's of F Minus and Leftover Cracks label, and they right. re-released the Morning Glory EP, The Whole World Is Watching. That's the third version of that EP.
Is it? Because, anyway, it has all their signatures, so I thought I'd get it. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, that's a good EP. That's a real good
fantastic.
EP.
It's fantastic. Let's see. I'm sorry?
No, keep going. I got a question for you, though, when you're done your stash show and tell here.
All right. I'm almost done. Today, Red City Radio, Dangers of Standing Still, first pressing came today, which I was very happy with. John, you'll be happy with this. I ordered Crazy in the Brains Let Me Go.
Nice. On vinyl or cassette?
Vinyl. Got it. Clear nice. Vinyl with green splatter
that's,
on it.
That's Barty Longhair Records. Crazy in the Kids, I'm telling you, Chris, if you want an awesome garage rock punk band, Crazy in the Brains.
They're just – I like them because they're just weird enough.
Right.
For a punk band to have a glockenspiel or a xylophone – I thought it was really cool and kind of out there, but this label, if you order from them, they throw in so much extra free shit. They sent me zines. There's a handwritten note thanking me for buying it.
Yeah, that's Baldy Longhair Records. They're one of my very favorite newest labels. Them and Burger are like my two favorite new labels. A lot of good stuff on Baldy Longhair.
Yeah, and they also, I mean, they sent me like pins, stickers, a poster. I mean, they threw. And zine and like magazines stuff like that. It was completely unexpected but very appreciated. And then I mean I picked up the Dwarves new album at the show that I went to and their EP.
How was the show?
It was cool, but the thing was when I bought my ticket, I was expecting the Dwarves to open for. Well, this was back in like July, but I was expecting the Dwarves to be headlining, but they weren't. And I think it was in. It was the Queers also were playing, so they headlined. So that threw me off, and I wasn't a huge Queers fan. But what was really cool about that show was that Richie Ramone did a Ramones set with the Queers like halfway through the Queers set. So that was kind of cool. And Blag signed the EP and the album for me, which is cool.
That's cool.
He's a really cool guy.
Blag's the man.
Yeah, and then. I'm waiting for my Direct Hit box set to get here, and also I pre-ordered the World Inferno Friendship Society album, so that's all I got.
So Ricky, I gotta say, so as someone that's getting more into this than I have been in the past, and really having not bought a CD in ages, but starting kind of.
My name's Adam White. I don't buy CDs.
I don't. I own too many of them. One day I'm going to die under the pile. I don't want to add to that. It's just going to expedite my death. So anyways, as I get more into the actual vinyl thing, the one thing that I've not embraced at this point is the variance thing.
Okay.
Like, so I'm, you know, usually, you know, I buy a lot of my records. I buy a lot of my records at shows from the bands or, you know, at the rare time when I'm at a record store that's any good. Again, I'm small town here, so we don't have a ton that are all that interesting here. But I'm usually buying something because I want to play it.
Right.
And before I started collecting records, I spent more time kind of building out my stereo. So I'm buying things really because I want to listen to them, and I want to have that experience where I'm sitting down and putting a record on and listening to it and having it sound really good and not being distracted by 700 things as I am when I'm listening to music digitally.
Right.
So that's what I feel that I'm in it for. But I don't think that I can. I don't know. I haven't crossed that boundary where I could justify going like, oh man, I need three copies of this 7-inch because each of them is in a different swirly color.
Okay. Oh, okay. I don't do that typically. This was just an EP that I loved. That Off With Their Heads Morning Glory one, I guess, is the one you're referencing.
Yeah, yeah.
I love that EP. The Morning Glory side to me is fantastic. That's why I did it. And the other two variants were like really dirt cheap. And I just thought, why not just have the whole thing? I don't do that very often at all. I think this was the second time I've done that. But I definitely try and go for color though. I just, this just kind of was that was
yeah, a I get that given the choice. Why not grab the one that looks more interesting? Like I'm with you there. I'm just wondering where the I feel that I'm approaching it. I'm approaching these things more as a listener than I am as a collector.
Okay.
And I don't quite know like where the line is. And if it's just two separate trajectories, like, I mean, I'm thinking of people that were like, you know, heavily collecting comic books in the 90s, really, like they'd buy these things. They wouldn't actually read them or anything because that would damage them, but they'd like make sure they were in like hermetically sealed Mylar bags or whatever. Right. So I don't know. I'm always self-analyzing my own nerdy pursuits just to make sure that I don't kind of climb too far up my own butt. And I'm looking at like buying variant copies of stuff and going like, I don't know. I would have a hard time like on the old budget there justifying why I need like, you know, a different copy of the same record because it's, you know, mauve instead of purple.
That's why I try and for me I'm a little bit more I want the first pressing, and if the first pressing comes in color, which it typically does now, that's what I try and shoot for. And also I like listening too, like the same thing. But I know diehard like record fans that will blow tons of money on the different variants, and to me I just want the first pressing variant, color variant. And that's it. That's all I really need.
No, will you pursue that then? Like you're in a record store, you say you find a copy of a record that you want,
mm-hmm.
but it's not that pressing. Will you go and you'll seek out the pressing?
I would try to, but usually, just like on Discogs and eBay and other places, they usually jack up the prices for the first color variant if you don't get it like at the pre-order. I'm not kidding. I saw the Lawrence Arms Old Calcutta blue first pressing. It's averaging like $75 or $100. So if it's out of range, like my price range, then I just won't do it. And I'll just get the black one and I'll deal with it. It's not the end of the world for me though.
Hmm. All right, cool. I was just curious about how you approach that.
But yeah, usually if I know a band is coming out with something soon, I am on top of that pre-order so fast that way I can just avoid that. Like, I think what happened this year? Oh, this year Against Me and the Lawrence Arms the same day announced pre-orders for their new albums that came out this year. And I got all the color. I got the first pressing variants that I wanted, but that was just like a day. That was just one rare day where I had to blow, you know, a good amount of money for a college student to get the vinyl I wanted.
Notice I asked you this question and not John, because I sort of assumed that if like the Melvins say tattooed their name on a piece of steak, John would go buy it.
You know what, Adam? I actually don't really collect that. To tell you the truth, my perspective is this, is I could buy the same record twice or I could have two different records. That being said, there are a few bands that I make exceptions for. Actually, for the Melvins, I always try to get the rarest version, but I don't try to buy all the versions, you know? World Inferno is actually the only band where I collect variants just because by happenstance I have like 90% of all the colors just by happenstance. So it's like, screw it, I'll just get them all. So I've got every color of every World Inferno record. But otherwise, I just want like one of the record. If I can get a first pressing, I'll get a first pressing. But if not, then I don't. I'm really more interested in collecting rare music than rare vinyls, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I totally get that.
Wait, do you have the Red Eyed Soul one where it's red mixed with like clear.
Ricky, my friend, I've got three Red Eye Souls. I've got Red Eye Soul on black. I've got Red Eye Soul on red, two records, and I also have the rare German edition of Red Eye Soul, one record on red.
Bam. Wow. Bam. You know what?
And I've got the CD version, and I've got the promo CD version with two bonus radio-friendly tracks. Bam, bam, bam.
I just have the. I just have the translucent red one. That's it.
That's the best one because it's got three extra bonus tracks, which are awesome.
Oh, okay, good.
Hold on. I have this record. Let's see which one I have, and I'll see if I can sell it to Ricky for big bucks here. all right. So Gatefold double LP. It's kind of like a whitish with like a red fuzziness around the middle. Yeah. Whatever you call that.
Yeah, I missed out on that one.
Yeah, you want it?
I was
seriously. I got a kid here. You gotta put him. You know how expensive diapers are. So let's make a deal here on the.
I saw it, surprisingly, when I saw it, it was not going for as much as I thought.
It fluctuates a lot actually because for a little while, that particular version was going for $100, but it's dropped a lot because the band stumbled across a box and put more back in circulation. They actually just sold a bunch of them at a show about 4 or 5 months ago.
Man, I do not know enough to actually follow, like, the markets on these things. So, anyways...
It's like Mad Money, but with records. Listen, if you get in the World Inferno, buy now. Prices are only going to go up. But for Lawrence Arms, let me tell you, ding, 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 prices are going to drop.
Yeah, exactly.
Sell Lawrence Arms while you can.
For the record, I paid nothing for this, and Bankshot sent it to me because I'm a big shit punk news editor. So, anyways... Are we talking about some stories? I mean, this has been materialism hour on the Punk News podcast.
Let's play a song to cleanse our palate. Listen, we got a little bit of a theme on tonight's show. Tonight's theme is Dominic Davi. Who's Dominic Davi, people might say? Dominic Davi is the man behind the man behind the man. Along with Jesse Townley and Jello Biafra, Dominic Davi is one of the guys that runs Alternative Tentacles Records. On top of that, he also is one of the guys at Kung Fu Records. And actually, Kung Fu Records, he urged the record label to release audio versions of their Live at the House of Blues series. Hence, this fantastic Live at the House of Blues by the Circle Jerks. So, Dominic pushed to have this record released. I'm so glad he did. The label put it out. Dominic did the layout. And let me tell you, this record sounds fantastic. Let's play a track from it. Let's play I Just Want Some Skank, and We'll Ride Right Into Beverly Hills, as the band is wont to do. So this is Live at the House of Blues, Circle Jerks, doing I Just Want Some Skank, greenlit by Dominic Davi.
Hustle to the hard part, breaking birds I've never won. Let's go get up on the roof, getting close, getting loose. I just want some gag, I just want some gag, I just want some gag, I just want some gag. Cause your fire's a loser, 7 lives, 7 losers. What's your good, what's your bad, let's go roll up your feet. I just want some gag, I just want some gag, I just want some gag, I just want some gag. Surrender that to masturbate. Take your money off, get these fellow people's and bad books. Just go to bed. Jason Penney's
Montgomery Ward, Walmart, Sears and Roebuck, Shop for Less. We'll get to that one.
All right, we're back. So we're going to talk about this Fugazi demo that Discord is releasing here. So the first song from this has shown up online for people to check out. They have released a demo of the song Merchandise, and you can go find that over at SoundCloud or go search it out on Punk News, and you can check it out there. This release, which is being called First Demo, is due out on November 11th, 2014. So that's when this thing is out. Any thoughts on this, guys? You check it out. John, you haven't expressed yourself as a huge Fugazi fan in the past.
I'm becoming a fan, I think. And I don't want to sound like I'm joining the group or whatever, but I did dig this demo. I checked it out. It was raw. The music was good. It was exciting. I don't know if I'd want a whole album of music that sounds like this, but I dug this track. And honestly, maybe for the Punk News listeners like me, maybe this demo will be the place where we finally understand or get Fugazi. I was digging this track. I really was. Also, how weird is it to see Ian MacKaye with hair? It's so weird. And because for some reason I always think his hair is blonde, but in his demo picture, his hair is clearly brown, like dark brown or even black. He looks so weird with hair.
Yeah, he does not often. Maybe he can't. I don't know.
He looks so angry or pensive too.
Well, when is he not? When has Ian MacKaye ever looked not angry or pensive?
That's his go-to look. Yeah.
That's his. He wakes up in the morning. He looks in the mirror. He looks angry and pensive. That's how he works. I'm kind of surprised how nice this sounds.
You mean sound quality wise or nice? Like it's soft music.
Not like it's soft and joyful. I mean that like it's whenever you see anything that's demo material that's going to be released, there is a good chance it's going to sound like shit. This doesn't. So I'm cool with it. I'm looking forward to this more than I was, and I think I've been sort of burned by, you know, going back to our infamous Bomb Records episode. A lot of things that have been released that are demos that probably didn't need to be released, but this sounds pretty good. So this might be a worthwhile thing.
Yeah, I'm a fan. I liked it a lot. I need to get either this or repeater on vinyl. That to me is the only way to listen to Fugazi.
I've not yet gone back and picked up like the Fugazi catalog vinyl wise, only because that seems like a lot of money. But
here's my point: you can get one Fugazi record on vinyl for $12, or you can get like four used Fugazi CDs from the bin for the same price. You know what I mean?
Nah. But on the other hand, all Discord stuff is super cheap.
That's true. That's true.
So even in Canada, like I grabbed a copy of The Argument in a store the other day, and it was brand new, sealed and packaged, and I'm pretty sure I didn't pay more than like $12 on it. And that's like after all the bullshit that happens when it comes over the border, so it gets more expensive. So it's probably not actually that hard to get all that stuff. I should just stop being lazy. And so should you, Ricky. Go get Repeater and 13 Songs.
And that's a good point. Go ahead, Ricky. Go ahead.
I do have I always blank on the name of this album. Oh, End Hits on vinyl.
Okay, go get those other two.
I will.
That's a good point. Like, if you see, like, Fugazi records for, like, $20, which you do, like, at Urban Outfitters or something like that, don't get it there. Go to your local record shop. They'll be very reasonably priced.
I make it a rule just not to get records at Urban Outfitters and Trader Joe's.
Hey, man, if I saw a rare Guar record, I don't care where it's at. I don't care if it's at the Klan meeting. If that's who's selling it, I'm buying it, man. I mean, I'll go anywhere to get the rare record. But that being said, the first place to go to your local record store if they're cool. But if they're dicks, I mean, don't subject yourself to meanness. if they're cool at the local record store, go there. You know what I mean?
Well, hold on. So if the record store dicks, then don't go there. But if the fucking Klan is selling the record, hey, that's cool.
No, I'm saying if the record store doesn't have it and the only people that have it is the Klan, then I'll go buy it from the Klan. But if the record – and I do not condone racism. I am 100% anti-racism.
What if the record store has it but they're dicks but the Klan also has it?
Then I'll go to the record store because the Klan are worse dicks.
Okay.
I hate it.
Let's clear that up.
But I'm just saying, man, like when it comes to getting them rare records, I have no pride, let me tell you.
This is just continuing the John Gentile.
Let's talk about the Smith Street
hate.
Band. Let's talk about the Smith Street Band. Let's talk about the Smith Street Band. The
All
Smith
right,
Street so- Band, they're streaming the new album. It's called Throw Me in the River. It's out October 28, which is today. And in the U.S., it's out via Side One Dummy, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah. In Australia, it's out via some local record band. What's particularly interesting about this record is that it was produced and really co-written with Jeff Rosenstock of Bomb the Music Industry, Antarctico Vespucci, Pegasus XXL, as well as Arrogant Sons of Bitches. This record, a lot of people are getting excited for this record. A lot of people think this is going to be the next hot record. Did you guys dig this? Is this the next Ordcore favorite band? Or will this be the Wham of 2014. Wham. Or not Wham, let me say Bananarama of 2014.
I'm struggling with this.
I am too.
I really like the EP that they put out. I thought it was fun. At least I liked the lead song on the EP they put out. I cannot remember the name of it right now. So that shows you. But anyways, no. I did like the EP that they put out earlier to kind of tease this thing. This is absolutely going to become a huge Orgcore record. It kind of ticks all the boxes that people that are into, say, Restorations or Frank Turner or anything like that are gonna jump on. And it's entirely competent. Like, you know, the song, it sounds good. The songs sound good. I think where I have a disconnect with this sort of thing is not so much on a quality of the record level, but on a what I'm really looking for in the genre level. Is that I need my stuff to be a little bit more raw and weird than this. And this isn't that. This is... It's almost like it's too good to phrase it in a really weird way. Like it's too it on the first song sort of finds the mode that it's going to be in. It finds the tone, finds the tempo, finds the voice, and then it doesn't really deviate from that. And not that it's necessarily monotonous, but it's not. It's not wacky enough, I guess, for me. And that's funny, being that this is a project that Jeff Rosenstock's involved in, because he usually tends to bring out the sort of weird end of whatever he's working with. This, you know, this will absolutely play, I think, really well to folks that are into, you know, I think Frank Turner in particular, and I'm hoping I'm not just like grabbing, you know, foreign English accent and lumping those all together, but I think it ticks a lot of the same kind of boxes. So yeah, I think this will do well. I think a lot of people will like it. I think they should like it, but I've been through it a couple of times and then I'm off listening to like some scuzzy garage band that sounds like it's recorded in a dumpster. So I don't know. That's such a horrible recommendation. I hate to do that, and I hate the crap on things people are liking. I don't think I am. It's just like, you know, if you're into this, Godspeed. I'm not really.
Yeah, I thought it was just it for me. It just wasn't. You know, I thought it was just kind of too clean, and a little didn't have the anger I was looking for. You know, and to answer the question, if it'll be an org chord. Like new Orgcore kind of band, I think so. I mean, if this is any clue, they toured with the Menzingers in Europe and I think Australia this year. So I think they're kind of, which I'm pretty sure the Menzingers are an orgcore band at this point.
You think?
Yeah. I think they kind of have a bit of that kind of darker sound that the Menzingers have kind of been going towards with their later stuff. So, this didn't work for me, but you know, if it works for other people, it's totally fine.
I agree with both the guys in that I guess people enjoy this the way people enjoy Bruce Springsteen, is that it is very well done. It's passionate, I guess. I guess the idea is that when you listen to this kind of music, you identify with the singer, you identify with the emotions they're going through. With punk rock, that's not necessarily what I'm looking for in punk rock. In punk rock, I want to be challenged or threatened or scared. You know, when I listen to Jello Biafra, I'm not like, man, I think just like Jello. I'm like, this guy is a weird dude. When I listen to Rudimentary Peni, I'm like, Nick Blinko is out of his skull. It's dangerous. It's exciting. I don't know what's going to happen next. That's what I like about punk rock. With this, it's more endemic, I guess, or symptomatic of the current what we see in punk rock, and maybe punk rock is being used for a different purpose now. Perhaps where punk rock used to be a thing to scare you, I guess, it's now more of a tool to unite. And so I guess the question is, and we've discussed this sort of before in the Punk News podcast, and Adam, maybe I'll throw this to you, is, are we out of date and this is what punk rock should be or is supposed to be? Or is this not punk rock and it's just a different form of music that is generally associated with punk rock, and the more wild, scary punk rock is no longer around anymore, I guess what I'm saying.
We're out of date, but that's, we've always known that. That's kind of always how it's been. I mean, back when the big thing was, whatever mall emo bands, alternative press, or what's it called? AbsolutePunk.net were promoting. When that was the big thing, we weren't really into that. So we've always sort of been out of date. So that's pretty normal. I think this is a little bit symptomatic of just the way that the... symptomatic is not the right word, because I'm not trying to condemn the music scene or anything, because... You know, because people are into this perfectly fine record. I think what I want to say is that
it is a well done record. It just doesn't speak
to me. Yeah, like there's nothing wrong with it. It's just not our thing. What I think that we see is a lot of music that we're exposed to because of this sort of 6 degrees of separation thing that you get because of the internet and because of the way that independent record labels work, where Smith Street Band could. And this record in and of itself could both entirely exist and be successful, and it would never come up as something that we would even be aware of necessarily, let alone something that we're going to talk about. And the reason why we're talking about it is because, oh, well, it's on Side One Dummy, or, oh, Jeff Rosenstock's involved with it, or, oh, you know, Side One released their earlier thing, or, oh, they're touring with Restorations and the Menzingers. So that brings them into the fold as being one of the bands that's playing the same circles as, you know, as other bands and other musicians that we've decided to pay attention to. So while maybe it is more of like an alternative rock record, if you really... think about it, or I don't even know what that means anymore, just a rock record, I guess, because there are so many of these things that we've decided are under our umbrella are involved, then this also ends up under our umbrella. You know, if you abstract it from the context of being, you know, produced by this punk rock person and touring with these punk rock people or whatever, then it's a little bit more fuzzy about, you know, is it even punk rock and should we be judging it like that? So we get exposed to stuff like this, you know, just because of all those social ties, I guess, that exist. Doesn't mean anything's right or wrong or anything, but that's one of the driving reasons behind why we post and talk about a lot of stuff on Punk News, both today and historically, is a lot of stuff kind of works on this. On this, you know, degrees of separation thing. I mean, hell, John, you posted a Gwen Stefani article the other day.
Well, I stand by that. No doubt. I stand by that.
Right. But it's, you know, it was clearly the furthest thing from a punk rock song,
That's true.
But we weren't looking at it necessarily from a, is this individual piece of music that we're talking about, does it tick all the punk rock boxes? We're more, you know, doing the, well, this was done by Gwen Stefani, who is in No Doubt, who at a certain point in their career were part of the ska punk scene, so therefore we're going to talk about them, right? So it's a similar sort of thing by which, you know, bands that, let's say, don't fit the weird and adventurous, you know, punk mold, I think, come into conversation here. It's not a bad thing. It's just sort of, that's just the way the world works, I guess.
Well, there you have it. Let's play something that is scary and dangerous. This is a track by Ratos de Porreio, a Brazilian punk rock / crossover thrash band. They've been around, I don't know, 25 years now. They've been around a long time. Their new album is called Seculo Sinistro, which means sinister secularism, I think. And it's out on Alternative Tentacles, and this goes back to Dominic Davi. Dominic Davi is one of the main guys that helped bring this record to America. Ratos de Porreio have had other records in the United States, and I think even on Alternative Tentacles, but he was really one of the main guys that helped bring this to the States and out on Alternative Tentacles. And I know he did the format for the cover work. So this is the new record by Ratos de Porreio, and the song is called Conflicto Violento, which means violent conflict. And when you buy this record, you get all the translations too, out on Alternative Tentacles, format done by Dominic Davi.
We are back. back, let's talk about a few other things that have gone on this week. John, there's a, you chose these stories because a lot of John bands in this list here. So, the Crust / Anarcho-Punk Legends Amoebics have announced the reissue of their... See, I paused there so you could scream something obnoxious and you didn't do it. Have announced the...
Axeman! For your life, the Axeman is coming. Axeman!
All right.
How's that, Adam?
Yeah, okay, cool. So Amoebics have announced a reissue of their seminal Arise album. In addition to being remastered, the reissue also features a bonus second disc comprised of a complete 1985 concert. The reissue is being released through Easy Action Records, the European version of which is due on November 3rd, and the U.S. version on November 25th. You can find a link for pre-orders and some other details and stuff like that on Punk News if you check this out. John, quick synopsis of Arise for the people.
Quick synopsis. Let me tell you, people, Amoebics is one of the all-time greatest bands ever. I love Amoebics. They are the first crust punk band. I mean, I feel confident in saying that. They actually say they're not crust punk, which I understand because they don't want to be pigeonholed. But they were the first band to combine, you know, Motorhead charging and Black Sabbath type riffing with, you know, neo-pagan lyrics and political lyrics and anarcho lyrics. It's an incredibly unique record. It's been out of print for a little while, so it's been a little expensive. So I'm glad they're putting it back into press. The old version with alternative technicals, it sounded fine. I think this will sound fine too. Maybe it'll be a little bit louder. I'm super duper excited for the 1985 concert because Amoebics only has one other semi-legitimate live album. It's called Make Some Noise, and it's good, but it's an audience recording. It's very, very rare. I've got it, of course, because I'm a record collector and. Well, I'm going to go anywhere to get records. This is a different show. I don't want to say unfortunately, but it's actually from their second album. Arise is their first LP. But I don't know if there are any live recordings from that era that sound any better than anything on the Bomp Records discography. So I'm super excited for this 1985 concert. If you're not into Amoebics, you should check them out. Check out the Arise album. It's definitely the place to start. It's a fantastic album. Super excited for this release.
Nice.
All right. So coming up next here, Say 10 Records is teaming up with the promoters of the Stay Sweet Fest to put on a weekend festival in Richmond, Virginia. The event is called the Stay Sweet Fest Presents a Say 10 Records Anniversary Party. It's going to take place from November 21st to 22nd, 2014, at the Broadway in Richmond. Acts announced include Tim Barry, Smoker Fire, and this is really Smoker Fire's only show of this year, Iron Reagan, Nightbirds, Spraynard, Beach Slang, Timeshares, Chumped, Pears, Entropy, Brutal Youth, Daycare Swindlers, Pedals on Our Pirate Ships, Divided Heaven, The Scandals, Jake Mayday, Invaluable, Close Talker, This Is Your Life, Let It Go, and Oklahoma Car Crash. There's more bands that are going to be announced for that thing soon. So Adam Gecking of Say 10 Records said the following. He said, Say 10, Richmond-based label, is beyond excited to team up with the local promoter of the Stay Sweet Fest to start our new yearly event. We normally do a small show with just local bands, but this year the goal is to do that, but also include local / regional friends, label bands, and some national headliners to have a big get-together in Richmond. We hope you can make it. You can find a link to all the details and everything on Punk News there. Now, Adam Gecking of Say 10. Did Adam Gecking used to run Bankshot Records? Anyone?
I do not know.
Yes.
Did he?
Yes.
Are you sure? Or are you just saying things?
I'm pretty sure. No, I don't think. I don't know.
No, Adam used to run a label called VMS. That's why I knew him. Okay, man.
He did the VMS series. Actually, Adam, if I may interject briefly, VMS have a series called VML. Oh, no, I'm thinking of VML Records. Never mind. I'm an idiot.
No, he used to run a label called VMS Records back in the day. Adam was a good friend of the... Well, he still is, I guess, but he was a good friend of the org back in the...
He was a good friend.
Well, back in the early 2000s when he was really doing VMS Records pretty hard, we had a lot of stuff that was going on with him. So anyways, yeah. So that's cool. You guys should check that out. Any thoughts on Say 10 Fest here?
Iron Reagan, Nightbirds are cool, man.
I have two things. One, go see Pears. And two, I didn't realize I've actually got actually a few things from this label. They really weren't on my radar, but now they definitely are. They put out that new Direct Hit EP that came out this year. Some other Direct Hit stuff. The Holy Mess Dead to Me split from Anchorless Records is on this website. I am liking what I'm seeing here. So if I could, I would go to this. Can someone explain Nightbirds to me? I saw them live, but I don't see this. I didn't see like this massive appeal. I thought they were good. I just didn't see like, shining down on them. Why that was going on?
Why don't you go back to your Frank Turner records, Ricky? How about that?
I don't have a Frank Turner record.
Go on, Adam.
So
smash him up.
There you go.
Teach him a lesson, Adam.
I just say no. I'm just asking. I'm not undermining the band at all.
Yes, you are, Ricky Frankel.
You suck.
All right, I'll go fuck myself then. Fine.
Yeah, thank you. Anyway, so I can't actually speak to them live because I haven't seen them live. So I'm just coming at this strictly from a recorded thing. Born to Die in Suburbia was a great LP. It was one of my favorite records of the year it came out, which is last year, I think?
Last year.
Yeah, they had a really cool record that came out this year, which is an EP that came out this year called Something Surf. What was it?
Was it that?
Yeah, it's four instruments.
Monster Surf. Yeah, was it called Monster Surf?
I don't think so. But keep talking. I'll look it up.
Oh, we need to figure this out. It's going to drive me nuts. All right, you look that up. Anyways, so they have this penchant for doing very, like, they throw in a lot of...
Monster Surf.
See, yeah. They throw in a lot of instrumental kind of surf music things. Actually, if anyone listened to the show before and has heard me play music from, like, Huevos Rancheros at times, they remind me a lot of that kind of, like, just fun kind of crunchy surf guitar sped up kind of stuff. Anyways, they do that kind of thing, but they intersect it by writing these great little punk songs. I love Nightbirds. I haven't seen them live, so I don't know what you take from that exactly.
I've seen them live three times, Ricky, and let me tell you what to take from Nightbirds when you see them live. They play super fast, super wild. It's a wild, energetic show. And the lead singer, Brian Gorsinger, he's off the hook. He's got kind of the Jello vibe going. He's a madman on the stage.
That's what made me fascinated with them. At the same time, their lead singer was just bouncing off the walls and pretending to jerk off the microphone and stuff like that.
That's what I want from a live punk rock show. Adam, finish him off, beat him up, take him down for the count.
I didn't mind it. I just didn't understand, but now I have John Gentile and Adam White.
You're there and you're like, where's the heart?
where's the soul? Where's the something that I can connect with and identify?
Not at all. I'm not asking for whatever. I mean, like, a Smith Street Band album, but like I saw like a bunch of people like flipping out. I'm like, I've not heard of these guys until right now. So I'm just going to see what's going on. And then I hear you two talking about them, and I'm like, okay, I got to figure this out.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't know. I think we said what we need to say about Nightbirds. I mean, like, they're in the lineage of the Dead Kennedys in that there is that kind of California surfiness that comes out through their stuff. But I don't think there's anything super complicated about them that you need to get or anything like that. I mean, like, go pick up Born to Die in Suburbia, check it out, it's super fun. And I don't know, I like Nightbirds a lot. Nightbirds is very much what I kind of want when I want to hear like a straight ahead punk rock band, nothing that's crossing over into some weird other genre or anything like that, but just if I had to just like give you like a textbook, like, this is what I want to hear when I listen to punk rock, Nightbirds is pretty close to the mark for me.
Sorry, okay. Ricky, not every song can be about being pensive with your friends and being unsecure about the future, so you rest your worries in the bottom of a bottle of whiskey. Sorry, Ricky, not everything can be about that.
If Ronnie Radke's not in it, it's not worth listening to.
Speaking of Ronnie Radke, HR of Bad Brains has announced a new collaborative EP with the Scotch Bonnets. The release is titled Quest and will be released on December 2nd via Morpheus Records / VMD or MVD.
MVD.
Yeah. Is that like music video distributors?
It is, but they put out music too.
Oh, okay. They should just call it Morpheus Records, then it would be a lot less confusing.
No, they're two different companies. One's in Scotland or Ireland, and the other one is in America. MVD's in America.
Oh, it's not like an imprint or anything like that. Yeah. I know. I'm aware of MVD. I just... All right, never mind. Anyways, that's not interesting. So, there's five tracks on this sucker. You can find the a picture and the track listing and all that kind of stuff on Punk News right now. Has anyone heard anything from this? I don't think anything's been released from it yet, has it?
No. I'll be brief. See, people hate on HR, and honestly, with good reason. He's a goofball, and when you go see him live, most of the time, he doesn't even try. It's like basically he's just not doing anything when you go see him. Sometimes he doesn't even sing, and the band just plays behind him. However, he has numerous reggae albums, and a lot of them are very good if you like reggae. Some of them are not good, but a lot of them, especially the SST albums, if you like reggae, his reggae albums are very good, energetic 80s reggae, kind of in the vein of Black Uhuru, kind of in the vein of Steel Pulse, that kind of thing. But he's goofy, and I don't know how much of his goofy is legitimately goofy and how much of it is to put on. I'd like to draw a comparison with Lee Scratch Perry. Lee Scratch Perry is a very, very, very famous Jamaican producer, and people say he's insane, and he quite clearly is insane. However, he's not nearly as insane as he acts, and I know this for numerous why. I've read lots of interviews with him, and I've interviewed him twice, and I've used this strategy. Sometimes when people interview Lee Scratch Perry, they'll say, "So Lee Perry, what was it like working with Andrew WK?" And he'll say something like, "The lightning in the clouds bound together, and I spoke to four doves, and it rained, and when I clap my hands, the universe will end," and it means nothing. But when you speak to Lee Perry, if you don't say to him, but you demonstrate that you know it's a put-on, and that you're not going to accept that as an answer, and you ask him very specific questions, then all of a sudden he reverts to who he really is and can answer things very directly, including very specific answers about what happened in the 50s, 60s, 70s with all the music. So Lee Perry, the only reason people think Lee Perry is as crazy as they think he is because the people around him and his fans and the press allow him to be that crazy, and he finds it amusing or whatever. So he's crazy, but he's not that crazy. My question with HR, is HR really as crazy as he acts, or is he only that crazy because people allow him to get away with acting as though he's that crazy? And I think it's the latter, because when he does want to perform reggae, he's pretty good. Will this record be good? I doubt it. I mean, I think it'll be okay. I'll be cautiously optimistic, but I really wish someone in HR's life, and I could be way off base here. Maybe he really does have a whole lot of problems, but I kind of wish, if he does have a whole lot of problems, I wish someone would really help him out with that. Or if it is all put on, I wish someone would say, "Listen, HR, I'm not going to accept that you're going just to act goofy. Let's be serious and try to make some real good art, because you are capable of great art."
Cool. I think that's a pretty... this is a pretty diplomatic way to look at it. So we're doing one more here, and we're going to wrap it up, I think. So Ricky, I think we're going to throw this one to you, because you're the tech enthusiast, I guess. We're going to call you that. Sure. anyways, so here's what we got: Gaslight Anthem guitarist Alex Rosamila, sure. And their guitar tech, Brad Clifford, showed off and talked about at length the guitars, amps, and effects that the band uses on stage. They go through everything from the model of the guitar they're playing to down to the speakers and the amp. It's a pretty lengthy look, but you can find the video on Punk News here. So this is a rig rundown of the Gaslight Anthem that PremiumGuitar.com put together. I have not watched this thing because I have things to do, but Ricky, nothing to do. So
I don't have anything to do. So first of all, I just want to say, I was totally joking about the Ronnie Radke bit. But anyway,
yeah, but you still hate the Nightbirds, so we hate you now, Ricky.
I never said that, so I'll continue. But here's the thing. Here's why I'm not a Gaslight Anthem like fan, but here's why I love this stuff. This is geared towards.
I hate this band, but here's why I enjoyed this one thing they did.
Here's the thing. I've seen this this series before with other bands, and for someone who plays guitar or just wants to see how, or if someone doesn't play guitar and just wants to see how they do it on stage, it's really interesting. I think Against Me did, this was during the tour they were doing with Against Me opening for them. So Against Me did a video of their Rig Rundown too. And I mean, I just totally nerd out with this, with guitars all the time. So seeing Brian Fallon's, like, you know, Fender custom Telecasters and just kind of get some background on why he uses them and stuff like that, I think is fascinating. I always like asking artists, like, why they choose the kind of guitars and amps that they do. So I love this, but I can totally understand why it's not for people who don't know about this stuff. I can totally see why it would be boring, but I had no problem sitting through this whole thing and kind of, you know, drooling over the easily $10,000 worth of guitars that Brian Fallon has with him on tour, which, you know, that's just the guitars though. But I love this stuff. So,
all right,
there you go,
John. Any gear thoughts, or are you checking out on this one?
You know, I wanted to become a gear guy because I thought it would get me girls, but then I saw Ricky Frankel doesn't even need gear to get girls, just being himself. So I said, you know what? If I'm going to get girls, I'll just try to. You know, the advice is be yourself to pick up women. That's not what I do. I be Ricky Frankel. I'm like, what would Ricky do? And that's how I get girls. Along those lines is World Inferno Friendship Society. They're releasing a new album. It'll be out by the time you hear this, or almost will be out. The technical release date is November 11, but the actual release date, I guess, is at Hallowmas, which is their annual Halloween show. I went last year, and let me briefly summarize it up. Last year, a month before the show, Jack Terrycloth went on and on about this singer named Grace Talicious and her band, The Paranoid Style. He loved the band in the 90s, he said, but he never approached Grace Talicious. Then a few days before the concert, she was killed by getting hit by, I think it was a bus. It might have been a taxi, but I think it was a bus. So for Hallowmas, instead of doing a concert, they did a wake. And when you walked in, well, actually out front of the venue, there was a big hearse. And as you walked in, they hand you prayer cards. And Grace Talicious was there in a coffin. It was crazy, right?
Whoa.
And so the whole show, the show, John Gentile's seen a lot of shows. I'm not bragging. But I've seen a lot of awesome shows. It was one of the top three, probably, shows I've ever seen in my entire life. The band played for, I don't know, 2 hours, 2.5 hours. They did all these amazing songs. At the end, they brought the coffin up on stage. And then a whole choir came out. It was, I guess you would call it like a Southern choir. You know, it was a choir from an African-American church. And they sung, like prayers. Well, not prayers, but, like, that kind of music. And Jack Terrycloth led the whole thing on stage. It was one of the greatest moments I've ever seen live. It was insane. There's probably about 30 people on stage. They're singing this church music, and then the choir leaves, and they do their famous song, Pumpkin Time, Rise Me Up. And I thought that Grace Talicious was going to get out of the coffin as they sang Rise Me Up, but she didn't. She stayed in the coffin. And that was essentially the end of the show. It was an amazing, amazing show. Well, they've got this new album coming out called This Packed Funeral. And the album is a concept record where most of the songs are people singing about Grace Talicious at her wake. A couple of the songs are covers of the band that she was in called The Paranoid Style. So I've heard the record. The record is really, really great. If you like World Inferno, you'll love it. It's, I want to say, World Inferno's Frank Sinatra album. And when I say that, I mean it's a very daring record, a very complicated, a very minute and, well, bombastic too record, but the band is extremely in control of themselves the whole time. It is amazing the things that they pull off and the ease that they pull them off with, much like Queen, if you will. Hallowmas this weekend. I'm super excited. I wonder if Grace Talicious's body will be back on stage or what. Who knows? I have no inside information, but I suspect that it's a two-part Hallowmas. Who knows what's going to happen? Let's play a song from the new album. It's called Elegant Solution. Out on Alternative Tentacles, the album is This Packed Funeral. And of course, our good friend Dominic Davi did the layout for this album and helped put out this album along with Jesse Townley and Jello Biafra. So this is Elegant Solution by World Inferno Friendship Society off their album This Packed Funeral, out Alternative Tentacles, November 11.
It must be easy not to worry about anything. No, actually, it takes a lot of work. Euphemisms will not serve, but bartenders will. No respite, take some friendly advice. This is never gonna happen. Let's look at a bet. I need a favor. Impossible to say, difficult to can do, that's what you say. Don't you dare. To decide was more attractive than your peace of mind. The road to the glamorous life is filled with cut hands and black eyes. Impossible to say, difficult to care. I knew that's what you'd say. Don't you dare, your gossip, your complaints. The gamut's undone. There's nothing any of us has done. That's some saint hasn't done. Again and again through the years, the promise of hope in a better life to come. It never happened, did it? Impossible to say, and yet look to care. I knew that's what you'd say. Don't you dare, you cast on your complaints. The moment's not done, there's nothing any of us has done. But some saint hasn't done. Oh,
we are back. John, that was really cool.
Yeah, I'm telling you, I love World Inferno. It's great when you follow a band for a while and they just keep – World Inferno, they never miss. It's hit after hit. They're so great. And I think Ricky's seeing them a little bit after I am.
Yeah, I'm seeing them – well, actually, okay, I have two things I have to ask you before we finish up here. One, do you dress up to go to these things?
Nah, I mean, honestly, I don't, because it'd be creepy if I did. The kids do, you know.
Because, but, I mean, the kids do.
I'm 31, you know what I mean? So it'd be a little, it'd be weird if I, going to an Aquabat show, dress up as an Aquabat. I'm 30, I'm too old for that, right. You know what I mean?
Okay. So I think I'm, because I know like the
you
diehard.
Could, I mean, honestly, Ricky, you should dress up, but here's why. You're still a younger guy. Well, yeah. Not that I'm old, 31 is not ancient. You're a younger guy, but you know, if you dress up, Ricky, you'll be able to pick up chicks like you usually do.
Oh my God.
You definitely should.
Okay, so I'll consider that. Also, I screwed
you should,
up.
You know what, Ricky, you should, because if you never have, you should at least once. So you should dress up.
Well, this is the reason I asked.
Feel weird. I mean, a lot of people do it.
The reason I ask is because it's my first World Inferno show.
You should dress up. I mean, no one's going to look at you weird. I mean, you should do it, you know.
All right, I'll take that under consideration. And then I screwed up. So you kind of answered my other question. I screwed up and bought a ticket to see the Misfits on the same day.
Tough call.
Which do I go to?
Oh, World, honestly, Ricky, I mean, A, Misfits tour all the time.
Right.
All the time. B, the cold fact is I'm a huge Misfits fan, but World Inferno now is better than the Misfits now by a mile. And on top of that, you'll be able to see the Misfits again. Next time you see World Inferno, it'll be an entirely different show because they change their show every tour. And they only hit the West Coast like once every year or two. And when you see the Misfits again, it's going to be the same show. So World Inferno, go see the Misfits later.
Perfect. All right.
All right. Well, I think that is it for tonight, unless there is something else anyone want to tell the people.
Bring us on home, Daddy W.
I don't. So we're done. Goodbye. See you in a week.